We're back in Parshat Naso. On Monday, we broke down Parshat Naso, which is a varied and diverse parsha, into its primary seven components. We had first the end of the Pekudat Levi'im, the charges to the Levi'im, what they're supposed to be doing. Then we had Shiloach HaTameim Min HaMachaneh, the removal of those who are Tamei from the encampment. We dealt with issues of theft, the Sota, the Nazir, and then we concluded with Birkat Kohanim and Korbanot HaNesim. And we talked about how what we're trying to create over the course of Parshat Naso, that the underlying theme really of Parshat Naso is to create a, 2 days ago, Machane Shechina. And what we established last time was that all of these components, or at least these top five components, are all about somehow creating a reality of this machane, of a machane that can have the Shechina dwell within it. We're removing the tmeim, we're removing the tum'ah from the machane. We talked about how there has to be a harmonious aspect to the machane, and theft denies each one's unique space and place and goal within the machane. We gave two options for the Sotah and the Nazir, that either the Sotah and the Nazir are the extremes that exist within the Machaneh, and how do we deal with extremes within the context of this encampment? Extremes of Tum'ah by Sotah, extremes of Kiddushah by Nazir. Or we suggested perhaps the flip side of that, maybe the opposite, that as we go and we get deeper and deeper into more inner chambers, how do we deal with a Safek Tum'ah of the Sotah? How do you deal with the context of the Machaneh when there's a question about Tum'ah? And how do you deal when people are striving for Kedusha when it's not clear if they've actually attained Kedusha or not? Because the Nazir has to bring a Korban Chatat. So either he elevated himself and then lost that lofty place, or he's bringing a Chatat because by elevating himself, he removed himself from actually achieving Kedusha by bringing Kedusha into the physical. So we talked about maybe these are dealing with the murkier aspects within the context of the Machanev of Kedusha. But we're trying to establish this reality of a Machaneh Shechina. Before we link in the bottom two topics, the last two topics in the parsha, Birkat Kohanim and Korbanot Nesi'im, what I want to kind of do is zoom out on this concept and discuss what this Machane Shechina is. What does Machane Shechina mean? When do we exist in the context of a Machane Shechina? What is the goal of a Machane Shechina? What's the goal of having a Mishkan, which is what creates a Machane Shechina? Shechina, obviously related to the word Mishkan. Mishkan is where the Shechina rests. So let's explore and examine this concept of Machane Shechina, which will hopefully clarify for us how the whole parsha in its totality comes together. Up until this point, we haven't had to make ourselves a Machane. Up until this point, where have we been situated? We talked about this before. Where have we been situated up until this point in Chumash? In fact, we're still there now. At Har Sinai. Since Parshat Yitro, we've parked ourselves at Har Sinai. We stayed there for the rest of Sefer Shemot. We stayed there for all of Sefer Vayikra. And now, at this moment, in this time, we're gearing up, we're getting ready to begin to move on to the next stage, to move away from the Har Sinai stage. What are we about to begin doing that we have not yet done before? We were at Har Sinai. We didn't do this at all. We were sitting at Har Sinai. Louder. Move. Journey. We're about to finally start journeying. In the Sefer, Sefer Midbar, which is the book of journeying. Right? We put back up that list of the underlying themes of the Sefer. Midbar, Derech, Dibor, Kishuvim, Arba, Four. We're about to go on that derech. We're about to start that journey. It's the book of journeying. And so we're about to embark on that journey. And the implication seems to be that as opposed to Har Sinai, where we sat there, ki'ish echad b'lev echad, we were just one mass sitting around Har Sinai, all unified, that part of what's necessary, that a necessary prerequisite to begin the journey from Har Sinai to Eretz Yisrael, a prerequisite to begin the journeying stage of the Jewish people, is to create a reality of a Machane Shechina. It's a prerequisite to move. It's a prerequisite to journey. And so in Bamidbar, we identify the individuals, we break them up into their encampments, and then in Parshat Naso, we then create this reality of a Machaneh Shechinah. Because a Machaneh Shechinah is the way in which we need to journey from Har Sinai to Eretz Yisrael, microcosmically. But what that teaches us is that Klal Yisrael is Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is Klal Yisrael, which is destined to be journeying and on the road for the majority of its history. Klal Yisrael, which is going to be the history of the wandering Jew. That the way in which we're meant to go out all of history, the way that we're meant to go through the entire journey of history, which is set by the paradigmatic book of journeying, the ideal way that we're meant to go through the journey of history is that we have to go through the journey of history as a Machaneh Shechinah. That's what it's setting up for us. That the two go hand in hand. That's what we're supposed to be. That's how we're supposed to move. It's how we're supposed to exist on the journey of history. Is as a Machaneh Shechinah. The Gemara in, I give out source sheets today, so we have some additional sources from Gemarot and Midrashim that we can all see them inside. Never trust me, always trust Chazal. So if we see it inside together, we know it's what Chazal are talking about. Source number 4. The Gemara in Masechet Megillah says, Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Bo re'ei kama chavivin Yisrael lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Come and see how beloved are Klal Yisrael to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Bekol makom shegalu, everywhere that Klal Yisrael are exiled to, Shechinah imahem. Definitionally, once the Shechinah enters into the context of Klal Yisrael, once it enters into this Machaneh Shechinah, we are guaranteed not just that from here to Eretz Yisrael, from here for all time, we will be a Machaneh Shechinah, the Shechinah will be with us. Galula Mitzrayim, Shechinah imahem, even from beforehand. When we went down to Mitzrayim, the Shechinah was with us. And it brings a pasuk as a proof. Galula Bavel, we're exiled to Bavel, Shechinah imahem. We go out to Bavel, the Shechinah is with us. And it brings a pasuk as a proof. And just to show how far it goes, the underline, the second underline, the af kishehin atidin ligael, and even in the time of our ultimate ge'ula, thousands of years later, nothing has changed. Shechinah imahen, the Shechinah remains with us. Shne'emar, quoting a pasuk, milamein shakarish baruch hu shavi imahen mi ben agaluyot. The history of the Jewish people, the history of the journey of the Jewish people from where they start to where they end, is the history of being with the Shechinah as a Machaneh Shechinah. It's not just limited to Sefer Bamidbar. Bamidbar is the paradigm of how we journey through history, and we must journey as a Machaneh Shechinah, and the Shechinah is always with us. The Shechinah, what makes us a Machaneh Shechinah, the place the Shechinah actually rests, is in the Mishkan. Hence again, sharing the same roots. Now, there's a funny thing about the Mishkan. We talk a lot about the Mishkan when we learn Chumash, because that's what we've got. And those of us who learn Navi may even talk about the Mishkan to a certain extent through Nevi'im. But then comes a certain point where all we talk about is Beit HaMikdash. So the question is then, and it's kind of fuzzy because it happens in Nevi'im and we don't really learn Navi, which is a big problem, right? So I make sure to learn in the Midrashah. We learn Nach. Nach is a key part of Tanakh. That's why I got 2 out of the 3 letters, right? Despite the fact that there's this murky transition that we don't often dignify and that we just start talking about Beit HaMikdash even though we don't know where it came from. But we know Beit HaMikdash is taking us through the rest of history. What's our presumption then about the relationship between Mishkan and Beit HaMikdash? Ever thought about that? What's the relationship? At a certain point, we stop talking about Mishkan and we start talking about Beit HaMikdash. What's the relationship between the two? What would you say? Focusing on your first point, you said the Mishkan is what travels with us, and the Beit HaMikdash is permanent. Come back to that in a second. Anybody else? One could, and you could tell me if I'm wrong, Eliana, one could read into your comment that the Mishkan is what journeys with us to get us to the Beit HaMikdash. And then once we have the permanent establishment of the Beit HaMikdash, that's the goal, and so the Mishkan becomes irrelevant, which is exactly why we stopped talking about it. I put words in your mouth. But, what? And it's what a lot of people tend to look at the Mishkan, and that's why it falls away. Chazal have an entirely different perspective on what Mishkan is. Yeah.
There are also different points throughout history. Like Mishkan, you just got out of Mitzrayim, and we were traveling through and we were at different stages when we came there to
Israel. Then the Mishkan stage ends, and the Beit HaMikdash stage begins.
Yeah, there are different things that we needed.
100%. Again, how it would make sense to look at it. It's almost like the Mishkan is the prototype. It's what's going to get us through and travel with us till we get to Beit HaMikdash. Then we get to Beit HaMikdash and we're good to go. And that, to use Eliana's word, that's permanent. Two problems with that. One, that's not how Chazal look at it. And number two is that Beit HaMikdash ends up not being permanent. So then what is the Mishkan? Take a look at the beautiful way that Chazal frame what happens to the Mishkan. And the way that my Rebbe understands the nuance of this Gemara. Take a look inside in source number 5. To Amar Mar. It's interesting that this Gemara is in Masechet Sota, which is another topic of our same Parsha. I don't have an explanation as to how that links in, but food for thought, the fact that this very concept emanates from a Masechet, which is coming from our Parsha. To Amar Mar. Yeah.
Was it you who was about it being under?
Yeah, this is. We did this in Shir Kali in the summer. Yeah, we're doing the same piece.
Okay.
So as Chavi remembered from the summer when we did this in Parshat Naso, the Gemara in Masechet Sota says, "The Amar Mar, Mishenivne Mikdash Rishon. Once the Beit HaMikdash was finally built, Nignaz Ohel Moed. Ohel Moed. The Mishkan was then hidden, buried." Nignaz El Moed, Kirashav, Kirasav, Uvrichav, Amudav, Adanav, all of the parts of the Mishkan were hidden away. Where were they hidden away? Heicha, says the Gemara. Where were they hidden away? Says the Gemara. Amar of Chista, Amar Avimi, Tachat Michilot Shel Heicha. That the Mishkan was taken and buried under the Heichal of the Beit HaMikdash. Underneath the Beit HaMikdash itself, underneath Makom HaMikdash to this day, sits the Mishkan. And the way that my Rebbe Rav Amos reframes it, is it's not just that it's underneath the Mishkan. What's the implication of the fact that it's underneath the Mishkan? What is it doing then?
It's the foundation.
Excellent. It's the foundation of the Mishkan itself. Sorry, the Mikdash itself. The foundation of Beit HaMikdash is Mishkan. The idea of creating a Makom Shechina, that's the foundation of the Beit HaMikdash. And the goal of Jewish history is to arrive to a place where we build Beit HaMikdash. And where Bezrat Hashem Eliana, that the goal is that the Beit HaMikdash should be permanent. That's the ultimate goal. But even when Beit HaMikdash goes, even though Beit HaMikdash can come and go, the foundations of Beit HaMikdash exist forever. The Mishkan exists forever. The Mishkan, the concept of what the Mishkan is, that doesn't get destroyed. That doesn't come and go. That foundation remains. Because wherever we are, the Shekhinah is with us. That was the Gemara that we just read in source number 4. The Mishkan, the Shekhinah always remains with us. The foundations of Beit HaMikdash are Mishkan. It's not that one is a prototype of the other. It remains the foundation for the other. And again, true that the ultimate goal is Beit HaMikdash, but the foundations of Beit HaMikdash are in Mishkan. And Mishkan goes with us forever. Mishkan is eternal. And it must be so. Dipping into a little bit of our deeper sources for a moment. Who builds the Mishkan? You're all muttering correct things under your breath, so start saying them louder. Go for it. Own it. Who builds the Mishkan? Not a secret. It's when first Suleiman Chumash. Bezalel constructs the components of the Mishkan, who for 8 days, one day after the other, puts it up, takes it down, puts it up, takes it down, puts it up, takes it down. Moshe Rabbeinu puts it up and takes it down. Mefurash Pesukim in Sefer Shmot. Okay, anyway. Mefurash Pesukim in Sefer Shmot. Moshe puts up and takes down the Mishkan. He's the one to actually construct the Mishkan. He puts together the Mishkan. And according to our deeper sources, we've discussed this in previous semesters of Midrasha. We're not going to go into the nuances of it now. But Al Pi Kabbalah, we have a system of Sfirot. Chesed, Gevura, Tiferet, Netzach, Hod, Yisod, and Malchut. And each one of those midot are fixed into the world by a particular individual. Moshe Rabbeinu is one of those individuals. What midah is embodied by Moshe Rabbeinu more so than any other midah? What midah is Moshe Rabbeinu linked to? Moshe is the midah of Netzach. What does Netzach mean? The Netzach Nitzachim. What's one layer of the... We're not going to do all of Netzach. Now what's one layer of the meaning of Netzach? Mazel Netzach Nitzachim. For all eternity. Moshe Rabbeinu embodies this concept of eternity. L'natzeach, of victory. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu is about. Moshe Rabbeinu is he who is linking into this eternal place. Moshe Rabbeinu is linking into the eternal, is bringing down an eternal Torah into this world. And everything that Moshe Rabbeinu does has an aspect of eternity to it. Moshe Rabbeinu builds the Mishkan. What does Moshe Rabbeinu not build? Beit HaMikdash. And as we'll talk about when we get there to Parshat Chukat, that may play into why Moshe Rabbeinu was not meant to build Beit HaMikdash, because Beit HaMikdash somehow, for some reason, because of the nature of the course of Jewish history, Beit HaMikdash has to come and go. And so Moshe Rabbeinu can't build Beit HaMikdash, because if he builds Beit HaMikdash, it can't be destroyed. And we'll talk about that more when we get to Parshat Chukat. But if Moshe Rabbeinu builds Beit HaMikdash, it can't be destroyed. But what does Moshe Rabbeinu build? He builds the Mishkan, and that's why the Mishkan must be eternal. The Mishkan is buried under Makom HaMikdash, and it can never be destroyed. The Mishkan is that which eternally goes with us. The Shekhinah is what eternally goes with us for all history. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu creates for us, a reality of Shekhinah, a reality of Machane Shekhinah, a reality of Mishkan that extends eternally. Tov. Questions, thoughts, comments up until this point? Yeah. Remember your name again?
Yelena.
Yeah.
So if the Mishkan is eternal, why do they need a physical Mishkan? Why don't we have
it? We need it to, at a certain point in Jewish history, history of the Klal, we needed to create the Mishkan to understand what it is, how it functions, all of the mysteries that the Mishkan contains. At a certain point, we planted that as the foundation of Mikdash, and we're in the phase of history where we're struggling to continue to get back to that Mikdash. The Mishkan's been established. It being the foundation of Mikdash is established. And now the struggle of history is to come back to that foundation. With the Mishkan, with the essence of the Mishkan still with us, and rebuild the Mikdash back there on top of that spot where we began to come. All of this being said, let's come back to the last two aspects of our parasha, Parashat Nasot. What we have left are Birkat Kohanim and Korbanot HaNesim. As we mentioned last time, it's incredible that we're coming back to the same date in Jewish history that we visited twice before. This seemingly incredible day of Aleph Nisan of the second year, which requires an examination on a Shmot level, which requires an examination on a Vayikra level, and now again requires examination on a Midbar level. This day of the Mishkan going up, the first time we saw the Mishkan go up in Shmot, it was the culmination of Shmot and Parshat Pekudei, the very end of the Sefer, where we leave Mitzrayim, we connect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we get the Torah, and we build a bayit with Hashem. We marry HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we build that bayit Ne'eman B'Yisrael, and that's the conclusion of Sefer Shmot, is when the Shekhinah comes into the Mishkan. On a Vayikra level, we didn't focus on that aspect of it. We focused on the aspect of this push and pull between creating boundaries when entering into spaces of Kiddushah that framed the entirety of Sefer Vayikra. of requiring us to define Tum'ah, Tahara, Kodesh, and Chol through the rest of the span of Sefer Vayikra in Parshat Shemini. Here, when we come to visit the topic of that day again, the day of the going up of the Mishkan, the day of Hakamat HaMishkan, we're seeing it from a lens that was never mentioned in either of the other Sfarim. Something unique that only is a layer that Bamidbar is going to bring out. In what way do we examine the Mishkan going up in the context of Sefer Bamidbar? What's happening in the end of the Parsha when the Mishkan goes up? The Korbanot and Nesim. That's how it's introduced. You can see it in your Chumashim, or you can see it on the source sheet. Source number 6. Vahi biyom kalot Moshe lehakim et ha-mishkan, when the Mishkan finally went up. Vayimshach oto vayikadesh oto ve'et kol keilav ve'et ha-mizbeach ve'et kol keilav vayimshachem vayikadesh otam vayikrevu nisi'ei Yisrael or shebit avotam heimu nisi'ei matot heima omdim al ha-pikudim. Then the Nesim came and brought these Korbanot. But we're seeing a whole other side. In Shemot, it was just Moshe puts it up and the Shekhinah comes in. Anan Hashem aleihat ha-mishkan. Vayikra? Moshe and Aaron work and they work to bring the Mishkan to a place where it goes. Then other people run in and bring a fire, and a fire comes down and brings the Mishkan to life and also consumes the Nadav and Avihu. But this whole other layer of the fact that day after day for 12 days, each one of the Nesim brought a Korban, and that Korban brought the Mishkan to life. That's going to be the Bamidbar layer of this multifaceted day. That belongs to Chumash HaPikudim. That belongs to a book which is all about the uniqueness of the individual. That goes and says, we have 12 different tribes, and each one of those tribes, one after the other, is going to bring a korban. And each tribe, even if they bring the exact same korban, we're going to list it, each one, again and again and again and again, exactly the same way, because each tribe is unique. Every single tribe counts and is counted. Every single tribe has its own identity. Every single shevet is unique. And so each one brings its korban with their own, the Sefarim talk about it, how each one with their own kavanot, with their own intentions, bringing out something new even within doing the same thing. But each one is unique, each one needs to be dignified. That's how we go through it. And only once every single one of the tribes brings a korban and relates to the Mishkan, only then does the Mishkan come to life at the conclusion of this, at the conclusion of the Parsha. Now, when we go through these different Korbanot Nesim, there's two other times during the year we read these Torah portions that deal with the Korbanot Nesim. Is anybody familiar with what the other times are that we read the Korbanot Nesim? Hanukkah, excellent. Why would we read it on Hanukkah? Hanukkah HaMizbeach. So we're doing Hanukkah HaMizbeach, and this is part of Hanukkah HaMizbeach. So each day of Hanukkah, we read one of the tribes bringing their korban until we sort of smush the rest of them in at the end because we run out of days. There's actually one other time that we read it. Anybody know? The minhag really exists amongst Nusach Sfard, primarily, to my knowledge. And many, many of the majority of the Shtiblach around here are almost so smart, so I've been watching it happen year after year, is they actually read on the days when these Korbanot are brought, they read the Korbanot and Nesim. So on Aleph Nisan, they read the first one, and on Bet Nisan, they read the second one, on Gimel Nisan, they read the third one. It's a very interesting minhag. They take out the Sefer Torah after davening is totally over. They take the Sefer Torah out and put it on the bima. You don't say Birkat Torah. There's no Birkat Torah. They open up and they just read the parsha. They read the korban for that day, and then put the Torah back into the Aron after davening's over. It's a very interesting minhag. When they start doing that, one would think that they would start from the beginning of the first korban, or if you will, from the beginning for us, source number 6. When we start bringing the korban, we move to the parsha, we move to the section of our parsha that deals with the korbanot nesim. But that's not where they start. Where do they start? Where do we begin reading from when we start reading about the korbanot nesim? What piece of the parsha have we yet to link in? Birkat Kohanim. Somehow Birkat Kohanim, both in the structure of the Parsha and even the way the Minhagim developed, is somehow a prerequisite for the Korbanot and Nesi'im. In what way? How? How does it function that Birkat Kohanim is a prerequisite for the Korbanot HaNesiim. How does it lead into the Korbanot HaNesiim? How is it the missing piece of our puzzle of this parsha that we have left to fit in? Let's take a look at the words of Birkat Kohanim themselves. Watch where Birkat Kohanim builds to over the course of the bracha. You can see inside in your Chumashim, in the end of Perek Vav, or you can see on source sheet in source number 3. Vayidaber Hashem Moshe Limor, Daber El Aharon Ve'El Banav Limor, Ko Divarchu Et Bnei Yisrael Amor Alehem. This is how you should bless Klal Yisrael. Yivarechecha Hashem V'yishmerecha, Ya'er Hashem Panav Elecha V'chuneka. How does it end? Yisa Hashem Panav Elecha, V'yaseim Lecha, Shalom. All of Birkat Kohanim builds up to a very key word, to the word which is the crescendo, the apex, the goal of Birkat Kohanim itself. The goal of Birkat Kohanim is to create a reality of shalom. And what is shalom? So it also means hello, and it also means goodbye, and it also means peace. But what does shalom really mean in its depth? Complete, full. When something is full, when something is complete, what does it mean when something is complete? It means that it's comprised of different components, different parts. And when it's complete, it means that all of the unique parts are coming together to form that complete whole and working in perfect harmony. Shalom is the harmonizing of all parts to create the whole. To create a whole that's more meaningful than the sum of its parts. That's shalom. That's mistranslated into an empty word that means peace, but that's what shalom means. It's when all elements are harmonized and working beautifully together. Birkat Kohanim needs to precede Korbanot HaNesiim, because Birkat Kohanim is the bracha for Klal Yisrael of creating a reality of shalom. It's saying you all are 12 individual parts. You're all 12 individual shvatim. Each one of you is unique. And each one of you needs to come one after the other, and each one's dignified on your own. But the only way that that becomes meaningful is if you're harmonized and become one. If you become shalem, if you're different parts that create a reality of shalom. And so the bracha of shalom, Birkat Kohanim, comes first to then unify and harmonize all of those 12 elements around the Mishkan. To bring them together, to unify them. Birkat Kohanim is a prerequisite for the Korbanot HaNesiim, and what unifies them and binds them together. What allows them to create Mishkan, what allows them to create, when the word Shalom comes up, where's the most common phrase that we see the word Shalom appear? Shalom. I guess there's many of them. One of the many of them is Shalom Bayit. If we want to have a Mishkan, which is going to be the beginnings of Beit HaMikdash, it's going to be the beginnings of that Bayit. It's what creates a reality of Shalom Bayit. What's going to allow for a reality of Shalom Bayit is if all of the pieces of Klal Yisrael come and harmonize together as one. Like we talked about 2 Shirim ago, when we talked about the division into camps, yes, we need each individual to rise, and then we need them to divide into those 4 camps. But as we talked about before, they need to harmonize, they need to come together as one, as Echad. Echad, which we said, is in Gematria 13, the 12 tribes in Shevet Levi. Where we have Levi, the 8 children of the Imahot, and the 4 children of the Shvachot, that they're all coming together into this reality of oneness that comes together through Shalom. Echad we talked about is Gematria, also of what word? We talked about 2 Shirim ago. Of Ahava. That true love creates a reality of oneness. And in fact, wouldn't you know it? What's the bracha of Birkat Kohanim? When a Kohen goes up to Duchen, what bracha do they say first? Asher kiddushanu b'kiddushato shel Aharon v'tzivanu l'varech et amo Yisrael be'ahava. Be'ahava. The Birkat Kohanim, a Kohen is only allowed to say Birkat Kohanim if they're able to feel a sense of ahava for every single person in the room. Because the goal of Birkat Kohanim is to create a unit, is to take all of the disparate elements, create a reality of shalom, of echad, of ahava, amongst all of those parts. It's part of the essence of what Birkat Kohanim is to get to that place. The goal of Birkat Kohanim is to create a reality of one, of ahava, the unity between all of those parts, to bring all of those parts together. The way we create a Machaneh Shechinah is we define it in these first five parts of the Parsha. But then once we understand what the Machaneh looks like, the way that we bring the Shechinah in is by giving it a bracha of shalom, of giving it a bracha of ahava, and then allowing each individual member, each individual tribe to come forward, show its unique part, but unify as one around that bayit, to make it a Klal Yisrael of shalom bayit. To make it a Klal Yisrael of Shalom Bayit. To make it a Klal Yisrael of Ahava. To make it a Klal Yisrael of Oneness. That happens through the Korbanot HaNesi'im with the backdrop of Birkat Kohanim. Then we have a Machaneh Shechinah. Just like when the only a home which has Shalom Bayit, that's a home in which the Shechinah dwells. So too, only when there is Shalom Bayit in the context of Klal Yisrael, only when Birkat Kohanim rests on Klal Yisrael, even when the Bracha of Shalom rests upon Klal Yisrael, only when we have Shalom Bayit, that's when the Shechinah rests within us, and then we have a Machaneh Shechinah. And that's the only way that we can successfully travel through history. The only way is if we're one. The only way is if we're united. The only way is if we take respect each one of our uniqueness and come together as a Chad Ahava. That's how we're meant to travel through history. Once that happens, we can finally have, as we've said, I've been using the same terminology, then the Mishkan, what was the term that we used? I forget exactly how I phrased it. Then the Mishkan can finally start up, finally get going. So I was intentionally using a murky phrase. Because in each book it defines very differently what it means that the Mishkan is up and running. In Shmot, it's when the Shechina, when the Anan covers the Mishkan, creating a sense of tzniut and unity and closeness of Shalom Bayit that we talked about in Sefer Shmot. The way that it happens in Sefer Vayikra is through the fire that comes out, that then needs to be understood, that somehow consumes the Davan Avihu as well, and what's going on, and how do we define how we approach the Mishkan? What's the way? How does this Parsha conclude? How does this Parsha conclude? It concludes with the Mishkan getting up and running, but it has a different way of framing the Mishkan being up and running. Take a look at the very last pasuk of the Parsha. You can look in your Chumashim, or you can look on your source sheet in source number... And source number should be somewhere on here. Source number 11, the concluding pasuk of Parshat Naso. Uvivo Moshe el Ol Moed ledaber ito. When Moshe would come to Ol Moed to talk with him, Vayishma takol medaber ilav, he would hear the voice speak to him, mi'al ha-kaporet, from on top of the kaporet, asher al aron ha'idut, mi'bein shnei akrim medaber ilav. He would hear, when he came into the Mishkan, he then, meaning the first time that Moshe Rabbeinu hears God speak from between the Kruvim within the Mishkan, that happens when we finally come together in this Achdut after the Korbanot Nesi'im. Not the Anan coming in, not the Esh coming down. In the context of Sefer Midbar, somehow the embodiment of the Mishkan getting up and running when we unify as one with our disparate elements is by God speaking from between the Kruvim. To me, that indicates two things, and we'll finish with this. Point number one is that it's emphasizing that Shalom Bayit piece. The Kruvim we've talked about many times in the past embody the fact one Kruv is Keneged HaKadosh Baruch Hu and one Kruv is Keneged Klal Yisrael. And it's the unity, the coming together as Echad of one of Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And that only happens when we as Klal Yisrael are one. If we're not one, there's no way for that to happen. There's no Achdut that's going to come out. And there's no ability for the Shechina to be Shore in a Shalom Bayit reality. It comes from that harmony. But this also struck me in an incredible way when I was preparing for Shir this time. Next Parsha, we're about to finish our discussion of Parshat Naso. And we're going to transition to Parshat Baalotcha. Parshat Baalotcha, the first half goes pretty well. The second part of Parshat Baalotcha, not so much. From Parshat Baalotcha on, we start to see the disastrous results of the lack of harmony amongst Klal Yisrael. The absolutely disastrous results. Which I was wondering and suspecting, and I want to suggest this as a possibility, that as one unit, and we've seen, we keep referencing Bamidbar when we talk about Nusso, and we were hinting to Nusso when we talked about Midbar, that Bamidbar and Nusso in my mind seem to be the two parshiot that are two halves of one whole, perhaps intentionally, perhaps, are two halves of one whole that come together to set the stage for what Sefer Bamidbar ideally is meant to accomplish. It hits on all of the beats of the underlying themes that we established for part for Sefer Bamidbar as a Sefer, and shows what we can accomplish and what the ideal is to achieve. How do we exist in the Midbar? What's the reality that we're supposed to create for ourselves? We come into this place where there's no pre-existing culture, and we create a culture of what it means to be called Israel. We define in Parshat Nusso, how do we journey? What's the derech? What's the journey for Klal Yisrael over all of the ages? Pikudim, what's the unique job? How do we recognize the uniqueness of the individual within the klal? How do we do that? By dividing up into four encampments. Arba's the fourth book, and we divide into four encampments that are unified as one. And I suspect that that hidden piece that's hiding behind all of Sefer Bamidbar, Dafka, comes out here. That when all of that comes together, if we do all of that right, if we get the physical space right, and we get the philosophical reality of each individual right, and we do harmonize, and we do unify, and we do journey as a Machaneh Shekhinah, and we bring all four parts of Klal Yisrael together in an Ach Dalid way that creates Echad, then we also create a reality where we're able to speak to each other, where there's positive dibor. Positive dibor between all of the elements of Klal Yisrael. There's communication between all elements of Klal Yisrael. And more powerfully even, as the final chord of Parshat Nusso, there's dialogue between Klal Yisrael and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Parsha ends with the beginning of that dialogue between God and the Jewish people. Unfortunately, that doesn't last. Which is why I suspect this is all from the top down. God is pushing everything in a certain way when we finally come and we reach the goal. And the hope is that we'll be able to carry that through. We'll have to explore over the context of the rest of Sefer Midbar if we succeed, where we succeed, and where we don't succeed. But I strongly suspect that the reason why Nusso identifies as the Mishkan coming online, as the first Dibor coming out, is because, again, underneath Sefer Bamidbar is this aspect of Dibor. It's within the word Bamidbar. When the Bamidbar comes together, the Dibor can come forth in the appropriate way. The Dibor can come forth as a conversation between us and each other, and us and the Kaddish Baruch. That's Parshat Nusso. That's our discussion. For our purposes, that's how we're going to talk about Parshat Nusso. Parshat Nusso is this amazing exploration of what it means to understand the creation of a Machane Shekhinah, how to bring the Shekhinah into the context of a Machane Shekhinah, and how Bezrat Hashem were meant to journey as a Machane Shekhinah, both locally in our learning through Sefer Bamidbar, and also Bezrat Hashem through all of history, in a way where the Mishkan is part of who we are, the Machane Shekhinah is part of who we are, that it becomes the foundations of Beit HaMikdash, and that we do see the Beit HaMikdash become permanent, Bezrat Hashem, with the building of the third Beit HaMikdash speedily in our days. We'll continue on with Parshat Baalotcha next week.